we get to make wines that are going to be different every single year because of what Mother Nature throws at us.
You're really in touch with the seasons.
This is farming. Where this all starts is agriculture.
Wine is both a representation of its place and a representation of its time.
We can't control Mother Nature.
To make really fine wine, you need to do it in the old traditional way.
It was a lot funkier back then than it is now.
We're in a creative kind of business, and so this is what makes it fun.
I really love what I do. I'm happiest, I think, when I'm in the vineyard.
We say, so drink the wine. That's kind of our motto here at Life Between the Vines. One of the cool things about wine, besides drinking it, is the people you drink it with. And the stories you hear and tell with wine all come together to make every bottle unique. Discovering and tasting wine shouldn't be a homework assignment. And we believe that the people who are closest to wine have the best stories. So open a bottle. And welcome to podcast number 157.
This week we feature Tom Gore of Tom Gore Vineyards in Alexander Valley. Tom Gore knew he wanted to be a grape farmer when he was a little boy. Heck, how many of us could even say we knew what we wanted to be even after college? While living life as a farmer, Tom is now introducing his first vintage of Tom Gore Vineyards wine. And we had the chance to chat with him in our home studio in Milwaukee. A passion for farming and wine. And in the end, we all win, don't we? We are here at the Life Between the Vines studios in Milwaukee with Tom Gore of Tom Gore Vineyards. Tom, how are you?
I'm great. Thanks for having me.
Not at all. Thank you for being here. I'm just kind of curious. Are you kind of going, is this like a whirlwind tour because you came with a couple of distributors and, you know?
Yeah, we're going to be out and about for a couple of days, but really we're going to, my wife and I are going to have a few days of vacation afterwards. She's from the area, and we're going to go up to a lake outside of Green Bay and catch perch and walleye.
Oh, cool. You know, come to Wisconsin, it is kind of a vacation land, isn't it? And what part of the state is she from?
She's from right outside Madison.
Okay.
She went to UW and played basketball, and so we tried to get back here a few times a year and hang out with the family and just relax and have a good time. It's a great place to be.
Yeah, it is, but a little bit cool this time of year, and we've got more than our share of rain, unfortunately. You guys, I guess, are probably doing okay out your way, more or less.
Okay. You know, I mean, it's a statewide drought, so we're really trying to pay attention to how we use water and what we do, but in the little bubble where our vineyards are, we've been getting pretty adequate rainfall over the winter, and our storage was up over the last couple of years. So while I wouldn't say we're totally out of the woods, we're doing better than some in California are.
Good. Well, I'm glad to hear that. And you're in Alexander Valley, correct?
Yeah, I'm born and raised in Alexander Valley. I'm a second-generation Alexander Valley grape grower. My dad and mom moved there in 1971. To farm wine grapes. My dad was offered two jobs out of college. One was growing chili peppers in New Mexico, and one was farming wine grapes in Alexander Valley. So I'm glad we're not talking about salsa right now.
Although salsa's not that bad.
Yeah, I love salsa. I just love wine a little more.
Yeah, exactly. Maybe not always good with a good red wine, that's for sure.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, cool. So it's neat that you're from that area. And Alexander Valley is a very interesting part of Sonoma because it's growing like crazy from what I'm seeing. And it is, as an AVA, it's become very popular.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, and I think there's lots of reasons for that. It's very beautiful. I think that there's a lot of open areas and acreage. You have to drive a while between wineries usually to get there. They're not really stacked up. And, of course, Cabernet being a varietal that is growing very quickly, and Cabernet being one of the focuses of Alexander Valley, I think that has a lot to do with it.
Even though you're in a winemaking family or a farming family, did you have any interest in wine when you were younger? Was it a point where all of a sudden you had that lightning bolt?
You know, I've always wanted to farm wine grapes. Other kids wanted to be a police officer or an astronaut, and I wanted to grow grapes. My dad took me around with him when I was a little boy, and I'd ride around in the truck with him. And I've never wanted to do anything else. So I'm really lucky that way. And it's just always been a big passion for me. I think part of it is farming in general and a growth towards farming. But then also when you can make a product like wine, and I didn't realize that at a young age, but I did realize that I really wanted to farm and I love grapes. And then I fell in love with wine over time.
Did your family, we talk about you being raised with wine. Were you able to try it when you were younger?
Oh, yeah. As long as I can remember. Watered down at first. And then always, you know, like a glass of wine at Christmas or a glass of wine at the Thanksgiving table. I wasn't allowed to drink per se, but I was allowed to try. And, you know, like most kids, I didn't like it when I was little. But it's one of those things that you grow to love. First you like it, then you grow to love it, and then it starts to become, it can be like I collect it now. So I grab bottles from all over the place, and it's been fun.
I want to come back to talking about collecting, but let's stick with this about your being a kid. Was there a time, though, that you wanted to escape, that farming life? Was it for you? Or did you decide that you wanted to head that way?
You know, I've always wanted to do it. I did. You know, I left for 6 years when I was in college. I've worked every harvest since I was seven doing something.
Wow.
And my first job was pulling leaves out of a gondola. My dad actually used, I think, the crew as a babysitter. He would run around and do all his stuff and check with wineries and talk to everybody that he was with. And he would just drop me off in the morning with the crew of pickers. And I would stand in the gondola with my rubber boots and pull leaves out of the gondolas and throw them on the ground. And then he'd come back and pick me up at the end of the day. They'd feed me tacos for lunch. I thought it was kind of a cool thing. You know, I didn't know that I was being pawned off.
Well, you know, not a lot of kids get to grow up that way, but again, it's the farming life. It's completely different than the city life or suburban life.
Yeah, and so then I left Sonoma County for college, obviously, and I was in San Luis Obispo in like the Central Coast area, but another wine growing region, and that's what I studied. And then when I graduated, I came back and worked in Napa for 7 years before I moved home to Alexander Valley, and I farmed some really world class vineyards over there. You know, I worked at Rutherford Hill Winery and farmed their estate properties. I worked at BV in Silverado and then Franciscan in Mount Veeder, and then came home and have been in Alexander Valley working with CME Clos du Bois, and now we've launched this.
Well, you got a nice pedigree.
I've been lucky, but I've also worked hard too, you know, really proud.
Well, there's nothing easy about farming, especially when you're coming up to that time of the year, which is breathing down your neck right now, where your personal life pretty much goes away.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, the Chardonnay's at 100% veraison, so it's starting right now, which is about 10 days before normal, and really starting to see a little bit of purple show up in the red grapes, and so it's going to be an early, but I think it'll be a good harvest. The stuff looks really nice.
We've seen 12, we've seen 13, we've seen 14 be these extraordinary vintages. What are you looking at now for 15?
Well, it's still a little early to tell, but I think there's been a lot of sunshine, and it's been beautiful. I think we're lining up to have another really good vintage. You know, it looks really nice, and the crop isn't too big. I think it'll be really balanced, and I think the crop will be beautiful, and I think the wines will be beautiful, but we got to get it in the barn before we can actually say that. You know, if we get any kind of rain or any kind of bad weather, that could change it real fast.
Yeah, real fast. When you're talking about the crop being not too big, is it just simply a case where you don't foresee a lot of dropping the fruit?
We'll do a little bit as needed, whether that's based on, you know, quality stuff that doesn't look good or stuff that's not coloring up with the rest of it to make it a little more uniform. But, yeah, I don't see a huge crop out there that we're going to need to actually reduce the amount of fruit that's on the vine.
So when did you get to the point where all of a sudden you decided, okay, I'm going to start making wine?
Well, I think there's a lot of layers to that. You know, my wife and I have a 2-acre vegetable farm, and we sell to a lot of farmers markets and restaurants locally where we live. And we really we really like to have a deep connection with whatever we're consuming, you know, and I think that that is something that people really relate to all over the place at this point in time. And we really wanted to kind of launch a wine that kind of had a little bit of that style in it, that farm to bottle, I guess you could say.
Yeah.
And so we wanted to launch a really fruit forward, but a varietally correct wine that we could deepen the connection and speak to more from the farming perspective than the winemaking perspective. Not that there's anything wrong with a winemaking perspective. Obviously, I've worked with winemakers for years and loved it and built a career around that. But we just really wanted to launch a wine and talk about it from a different perspective.
So when was your first vintage?
Yeah, this is the first vintage. So it's a 2012 Cabernet and Field Blend and a 2013 Chardonnay.
Well, 12 isn't a bad way to start now, is it?
No, it's not at all. It's not at all. I wouldn't say lucky because we worked hard to farm the grapes, but we're really blessed that it started with such a great vintage. And I think the wines really show that.
Well, it certainly helps when Mother Nature cooperates in the long run, right? After 2011 being such a wet vintage, it was crazy.
Yeah, 11 was a challenge, but I still think there's some nice wines to be had, just they all aren't stylistically they're a little different, but I still think there's some beautiful wines to be had. It's just kind of I always, when did you harvest your grapes? Was it before it rained a lot or after it rained a lot is really kind of where it comes down to for that.
So many critics panned 11, which bugged the heck out of me as a wine drinker because I've had a lot of those really great 11s, but as a farmer, winemaker, was that something that really bothered you a lot?
Well, I just think it's, I'll take it back to like 97 and 98, where 98 was just totally panned and people didn't support it at first. And 97 was given golden reviews out of the gate. And if you drink those two wines today, I think the 98s hold up quite a bit better than the 97s did. I think the 97s were great when they were young wines, but a lot of the 98s are really drinking beautifully right now. And I think that there's something to be said about challenging vintages, and it's not wrong to identify challenging vintages, but I also think that over time the wines will tell you whether or not they'll stand up or not.
Yeah, that's a great way to put it. Well, I want to pedal back here to to the idea of collecting. So you're officially a collector then?
I have way too much wine that I'll ever drink. So yes, absolutely.
I don't think there's anything in the world wrong with that. What do you collect?
Well, I think the first thing that I do is I have a vertical of all the wines that I've worked on over the years. And so I keep kind of a vertical of, or I would say a vertical, but wines from each vintage that
sure.
I grow. And so every year I buy, a case or two and kind of put that away. But I love all kinds of wines. I love Cabernets. I love Zinfandels from California. I like French Burgundies. I love all kinds of stuff. Old wines, young wines, whatever. The oldest one I have is a 34 port from Simi.
Oh, my.
Yeah.
Wow. That's got to be fun.
Yeah, I tried it at the winery once when they had it open. I haven't had the occasion to open it up. And when we did open it up, it was really interesting, too, because it was the oldest thing in the room at the time. And that was kind of a little bit interesting to get your head around,
Yeah, yeah. That's where this whole reality of being a winemaker comes home. It's like, yeah, this is about love.
Yeah, it is. It is. And it's something that's always changing and always done. I look at it kind of like a time capsule of a year's work, and it's always changing. It's never exactly the same as it was. It's obviously goes through a huge evolutionary process when it's in a bottle. But it's definitely like a way to go back and kind of remember what you did. And a lot of the experiences that I've had with wine over the years aren't necessarily directly related to how great or how bad a bottle of wine was. It's more about who you're with, what you're doing. It doesn't hurt to have a great wine, but, it's really how you feel with the people you're with at the time.
That's a lot of it. It does bring people together. I think that's why the tasting room concept goes over so well.
Yeah, I think so. I think, it's just very connective. It just builds connections, and whether that's food or whether that's people. And I think that that's really what we're trying to do with what we're trying to launch is deepen the connection as far as we can with the people that might give it a try.
Do you mind if I ask you how many bottles or how many cases you have?
No, well, I have multiple stashes. So I have like a 12 case locker that I rent that is wines that I won't touch that were either stuff that my dad gave me or stuff that's old vintages or stuff that I brought some of it out when I got married last year, but that usually I don't touch. And then I have I probably have about 750 bottles at home, and I got nowhere else to put it, so now is the challenge. Do you get a bigger box or do you drink some of it or both?
Both. Or share it with your friends.
Yeah, right. Yeah, so when you – yeah, exactly. Sharing is what it's all about.
So you're making a Chardonnay. You're making a Cabernet Sauvignon. And you're also making a field blend.
Yes.
I want to talk about field blend for a minute. Do me
sure.
a favor. Give me your definition of that for our listeners who may not be familiar with that.
Well, I think there's a couple of different ways you can look at it. And this, for us, it's all out of one vineyard. We do not harvest it at the, we do not harvest all the varieties at the same time. We harvest the varieties separately and blend, but they're all in the same 20-acre kind of square. So I've got Petit Verdot next to Malbec, next to Merlot, and Tempranillo is very close by. So that's really the core of the blend. Is it's 36% Petit Verdot, 33% Malbec, 10% Merlot, 8% Tempranillo, and I'll say the rest is Cabernet, because if it doesn't add up to 100 and it's unrecorded, then I'll get in trouble, right?
Yeah. We'll put beeps in there for you or something
that. And so this is a single vineyard in Alexander Valley that historically has been blended into other stuff, and we really felt like the components or the varieties that we were choosing really – we could give them a different platform to sing and put them in a blend. And because I'm a farmer, you know, we really wanted to show the fruit and all the wines, but have them be, you know, varietally correct and show off.
I'm going to go back again to your blend you're talking about. That's a lot of Petit Verdot. That surprised
right,
me.
Right. It is. It is. And when we first put the blend together and I looked at the number, you know, we were trying the wines and we were going through it all. The first time that we put that blend together, I was nervous to taste it because I wouldn't say nervous, but I was afraid that the Petit Verdot was going to overdominate it, because you can taste 4% in some of these blends. But I think we got a really special spot where it really is it really mellows out, and it has the backbone that you would expect out of Petit Verdot, but the tannins are very soft and it's not too harsh. And then it's also got a high percentage of Malbec, which is going to elevate the nose a little bit, and it's a little softer on the mouth. So they kind of work together really well with those two high percentages of those varieties. They do really well. And I think that the Tempranillo had something special too.
Yeah, I think you did well. That was the one I tried last night. Very nice. Nice job. That is, though, still, I see your point. It's a bit of a, you have to have a little trepidation when you're doing this kind of blend, especially when you have different numbers. But isn't that what wine's all about? Because you guys are all different at how you go about your blends.
Yeah, and next time and the next wine, we've already blended it. It's going to come out probably a few months from now, 6 months from now. It's different. It's a little different. I mean, it's the same varieties, but it's tweaked a little bit because there's a different vintage, you know, and a different vintage is going to give you different characteristics. And you really have to take a step back and take what the field gives you. And I think that's really one of the things that we're looking at with this field blend and with the wines in general, you know.
What about your Cabernet? Is that 100% or do you have a blend?
No, it's the Cabernet is 93% Cab, 6% Merlot. And then the last little bit is Petit Verdot and Malbec again. I farm 1,500 acres in Alexander Valley. Actually, it's all not in Alexander Valley. There's a little bit in 25 acres in Dry Creek, 100 in it, Russian River, 15 in Sonoma Valley, 150 in Mendocino, and there's about around 1,000 that's in Alexander Valley proper. And I farm within that Cabernet, there's 14 different rootstocks and about 20 clones of Cabernet that all give these different flavors. So we really focused, because this wine, we really wanted to show off the fruit that Cabernet can give you and deliver value to the consumer. And so we really did this blend that was the fruit forward Cabernet clones. So 337, I know these are just numbers, but 337, 7, 8, 10 to give you, and clone 4 tend to give you a little more fruit flavor. They're not the really, 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 really intense ones that you would see. We just really wanted to go with the fruit forward clones and really deliver a wine that had a lot of value for the price point.
That makes sense. Well, I think there are a lot of people that like to geek out. I mean, that's part of this whole deal, because it is fascinating. No different than how you would change the direction of a vineyard because of where the sun's going to hit it on a given time, or, you know, hilltop fog.
Yeah, and I've flipped them, and I flipped the row directions when we pulled out a vineyard and planted a new one, to your point exactly, and the flavor changes.
Yeah.
Well, even if it's the same clone and the same rootstock, and you go back into the same place, and which isn't something we typically do. We usually like to shake it up a little bit, learn something, and change it. But I'm telling you that different amounts of sun, different amount of lights, when you pull leaves, when you sucker, whatever you do in the field is going to be reflective some way in the flavor of the grapes. You know, I always used to say that at the day of harvest, my vineyard and my next door neighbor's vineyard might look exactly the same. But if I pulled leaves a month earlier or a month later, or you know, you had different times where you trimmed or hedged, all those things are going to be slight changes. I'm not going to say which one's better because you don't know. Right. You hope the way that you do it and your philosophy is one of the ones that is at least in the conversation for the better way to do it. But the reality is you don't know until you taste the wine. And then you don't know again until you taste the wine 5 years later. It might change.
Yeah, right. I think isn't that what it comes down to? People talk about the craft and you know, the science of it, and then there's the art, and this is what the art's all about, right?
Yeah, well, I mean, that's the art of the field, and that's really what we're trying to come from. You know, I work with a great winemaker partner, and we've known each other since I was 10 years old. And so it's really cool to have a relationship like that with the person that you're making your wine with. But we really kind of wanted to talk about like the art of the field and really have that be expressed in the wines that we're releasing.
You're obviously so integrated into everything out there. I mean, knowing somebody since you're 10 years old to be able to work with them at whatever age you might be at this time in your life.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool.
Just turned 40.
Really?
Yeah, turned 40.
I got to tell you, I would have never guessed that. I wanted to ask you a little while ago, but I would put you probably 35.
Oh, well, thank you. But I just turned 40.
Well, it's a combination of farming and drinking wine.
Yeah, right.
How many cases of wine are you doing?
Well, the field blend's really limited, and that's around $40 a bottle. And that's we did about 1,000 cases of that. And then the Cabernet and the Chard were 75,000 of each, and those are around you'll find them between $13 and $15.
I'm going to go back. Did you say 75,000?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
When you said 1,000 and then went to 75, that sort of threw me a curveball.
Maybe I should have started with the other ones first.
Yeah. Well, it just was unexpected. I was thinking a lot smaller, and even though that is still relatively small as the world turns. So what about distribution as far as, you know, you're here in Wisconsin traveling. I know you're visiting family. Are you selling wine here in Wisconsin?
Yeah, we are selling wine here in Wisconsin and most of the other states actually. Now we're still rolling out a few as we go forward and doing a few more launches, but it's pretty well distributed and really lucky to have good partners there to do that, to help with that. But it's been a really good launch and a really good rollout, and I really think that we're delivering a really good value product that I'm very proud of when we open up and taste it. The quality's in the bottle, and the people that buy it are going to get a fair deal on a good wine. And that's really what I'm about. My dad used to say when I was a little kid that the best wine you'll ever have is one you want to have another glass of. And well, that may not be exactly true. There's a lot of truth in the statement, you know, where we can really, like we were talking a little bit earlier about simplifying it and bringing it back to a home place. And it's really that if somebody really likes what they're drinking and they're enjoying it and they're having a good time, then that's their great wine.
Right.
And nobody's wrong.
That's true. You know? Right. Is your wife involved too?
Yeah. Well, I mean, she's not involved in farming the grapes per se, but we farm at home together, and we grow about 60 or 70 different things. We grow 70 different things at home. We make our own olive oil, which she's heavily involved in. We make our own – we make our own honey, but the bees actually make the honey, and we just take it from them. But we do a little honey. We grow quite a bit of tomatoes, and we sell the tomatoes quite a bit to the local restaurants. We have chickens and do eggs, and then we have we do roses and do rose garden and sell some of those. And so I think that's kind of where the layers for this idea kind of all started coming together, is we really have the ability to enjoy this, really walk in your backyard, pick what you want to eat, and bring it inside and cook dinner. And we wanted to do a wine that reflect that kind of a lifestyle as well, and reflected that those values and what we were trying to create. And I think that that's kind of how it all started to layer and come together.
And for you, it really is all about farming.
Yeah, it really is. It really is. I mean, people ask me what my hobbies are, and that's kind of what they are.
It's not a bad hobby, you know. Well, farming in general, I mean, just being able to raise the crops you're talking about, it's a lot of fun for people who like getting their hands dirty. But your whole background's about farming, so.
I'm really excited to see the development over the last 10 years and the next 10 years of the kind of movement for people to have local foods and to be more connected to what they're consuming, whether that be, you know, it feels like 10 years ago a cup of coffee was a cup of coffee, and now people know the difference between shade-grown coffee and dry-roasted here. And I'm not a perfect coffee person per se, but, you know, you really see this evolution. I use that as an example of – the different nuances that you can get out of something when it used to, you just walk into a restaurant and say, give me a cup of coffee. And now I think that wherever you go, people want to know where their food, their wine, their whatever they're going to – whatever they're going to put in their body comes from. And I think that I'm really happy to see that people are more excited to eat that way every day.
Well, I think that that covers so many other areas. I mean, you see some of that even in spirits. You definitely see that in beer. And you know, it takes me back to when I was a kid. My dad was a big beer drinker, and it's like, oh, it tastes the same.
Yeah.
And I say, no, Dad, it doesn't. He would have lost his
mind. An elevated palate even then, right?
Yeah, exactly. Like, house palate, yes.
Yeah,
exactly.
House palate.
Yeah, right.
Budweiser.
Yeah. No, my dad was a Carlings man, so it's kind of interesting. Are you planning on going beyond the three? Are you thinking about Zin or Pinot or?
Yeah, you know, I think for now we want to focus on what we're doing and do it right and do it well. And hopefully we can take the what we've done with the launch so far and successfully back that up. And at some point we'll look at line extensions or figuring out what we want to do next. But I think today we just want to focus on what we got. We're going to do with one thing we are going to do is a reserve Cabernet.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. Nice. Yeah. And that'll probably come out sometime next year. It's a 2013 vineyard designate cab from Alexander Valley, and it's excellent, but we're just going to kind of let it age a little bit more before it hits the market and see what we got.
I'm assuming you don't have a tasting room right now, or do you?
No, we don't right now. We're getting out and talking to folks about restaurants and trying to get placed in different wine shops and different grocery outlets where depending on what the state allows. And that's an interesting thing when you go around the country and see how every state has different rules to how that happens. Yeah, that's going to be our focus right now is, you know, kind of getting it out there. And depending on, you know, where this all lands, we'll look at doing a tasting room or something like that, I think, out in the future. But right now, I think we're just going to try to stick with the initial plan. And it's always easy to think about what's next, but it's important to execute at the beginning, you know, what the original plan was before you start sure. thinking about what's next.
Well, yeah, that's great. One great way to mess it up when you get right
yeah,
there.
Right? Yeah, right.
For our listeners to learn a little bit about Tom Gore Vineyards online, how would they do that?
Well, there's two ways. You can follow us on Facebook. There's a Tom Gore Vineyard Facebook page. And we also have a website that's tomgorevineyards.com. And it has a finder also. So if you want to find where the wine's being sold locally where you are, that's a good place to check it out. And there's some cool photographs and videos that kind of show what we're doing out there in Sonoma County, and I encourage the listeners to check it out. It's a fun little website.
It is. I liked what I saw on it. Thanks very much for taking the time this evening. I'm sure you just got into town, right?
Yeah, landed and came straight here.
Oh, nice. Well, thank you. I'm honored you were able to be here. I really do appreciate it.
Wouldn't have had another way. This is great, man.
Oh, it's very cool. Thank you, and have a great visit to Wisconsin. Where are you off to next?
Dinner.
I mean, after Wisconsin, are you going back home?
Yeah, after Wisconsin. After Wisconsin, we're going to go home. And then we got, harvest is going to be right around the corner. So I think that this is kind of my last one before we really start focusing on getting everything ready for harvest. And then we'll be picking grapes. You should come out and see us.
I hope to do that. I will plan on being out there probably in the next month or so with any luck.
Yeah, well, if you do, look me up. It'd be great to see you.
I'll do that. Excellent.
All right. Cheers.
Cheers.
Thank you.
Learn more by visiting tomgorevineyards.com.
Thanks for listening, and remember to like us on Facebook. Also, check out our YouTube channel.
Life Between the Vines is produced at Fifth Floor Recording Company in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Produced and edited by Ray Pfister. Theme song and original music written and recorded by Tim Dondarevo. Our host is Kay Paskoff. Web design by Jenny Holland. Our graphics and website specialist is Lawton Hall. Our web geek is Dan Gieschen. Photos by Jeanette Herniak. Copyright 2015.